This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott, and today we're talking about failure, which brings up one of the most famous movie quotes on the subject, and there are many. This one from the film Apollo 13.
We never lost an American in space. We're sure as hell not going to lose one on my watch. Failure is not an option.
Ed Harris there performing as real-life NASA flight director Gene Kranz, who led the successful return of three astronauts after an explosion aboard their spacecraft nearly turned a planned mission to the moon into a national tragedy. Throughout the ordeal, Kranz, or the actor playing him anyway, never acknowledges the possibility of failure.
This could be the worst disaster NASA's ever experienced.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
As inspiring as those lines may be, the truth is that failure, in some form or another, is always an option. Things go wrong, especially in outer space, which is exactly why there is a test called the Kobayashi Maru.
Captain's log, stardate 8130.3. Starship Enterprise on training mission.
Okay, so I'm not talking about NASA anymore.
The Kobayashi Maru was introduced in Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, which, for my money, is the absolute best major motion picture of the entire Star Trek franchise.
And that is Janet Sten-Waddell. She's a professor of philosophy at San Jose State University.
So the overview is the Kobayashi Maru test presents a cadet with what looks like a no-win situation, although they don't realize it at the time.
So here's how it works. The cadet taking the test is captain of a fake ship, a working replica of the USS Enterprise used to train the crew by subjecting them to a number of fictional scenarios.
Project parabolic course to avoid entering neutral zone.
Aye, Captain.
Now, in this scenario, the fake USS Enterprise gets a distress call from a freighter called the Kobayashi Maru.
This is the Kobayashi Maru. 19 periods out of all tier 6.
Everybody aboard the freighter, which is stranded and is losing power, will die if they are not rescued.
This is the Starship Enterprise. Your message is breaking up. Can you give us your coordinates?
But here's the catch. The Kobayashi Maru is stranded in a so-called neutral zone. That is a territory which, if entered, could trigger a war with the Klingons, which for you non-Trekkies are the bad guys.
Mr. Sulu, plot an intercept course.
May I remind the captain that if the starship enters the zone...
I'm aware of my responsibilities, mister.
So the cadet is left with a choice. Leave the nearly 400 souls aboard the Kobayashi Maru to die, or attempt a rescue that would almost certainly leave even more people dead. In The Wrath of Khan, that cadet is Lieutenant Savick, played by Kirstie Alley. She decides to take the second, bolder option.
Evasive action!
All of a sudden, Klingon ships decloak. There's no good way to get out. Shots are fired. People go down on the bridge, and then we find out that it was a simulation. And as a cadet, she's feeling like she's failed.
And of course, that is how she is supposed to feel, because in the Kobayashi Maru scenario, failure is not just an option, it is the only option. And only then, after the simulation has ended, does the real test begin.
Part of the point of the Kobayashi Maru is, what do you do after you face a loss? Do you throw up your hands and say, I'm done? Do you say this whole captaining a starship thing isn't for me because there will be conditions where I'm going to have to sustain losses? Or do you learn something from it that informs how you go forward?
I don't believe this was a fair test of my command abilities.
And why not?
Because there was no way to win.
A no-win situation is a possibility every commander may face. Has that never occurred to you?
No, sir. It has not.
And that voice you hear lecturing Savick on the purpose of the Kobayashi Maru belongs to none other than Captain James T. Kirk, Star Trek's bold, though impulsive, hero, played by William Shatner. He, as we find out later in the film, is the only Starfleet cadet to ever, quote, win the no-win scenario. But we're going to put that aside for just a bit. First, let's consider this. Can a test designed to prepare a person for failure really deliver? Can the consequences of real failure be experienced with what amounts to fake stakes? Is the Kobayashi Maru instructive for aspiring space explorers, or a somewhat sadistic experiment with dubious real-world applications? That's a line of inquiry that led us back to NASA, where, according to Gene Kranz anyway, failure is not an option.
We have a training division, and it's their job to train not only astronauts, but the flight controllers that respond to the systems on the ground side of things.
This is Chris Cassidy. He's a former Navy SEAL and an astronaut who spent more than 180 days in space. He's currently serving as NASA's chief astronaut.
Really, my main responsibility is to determine who goes on which missions, kind of the crew pairing and that sort of thing.
Okay, can I just jump in here?
That's my colleague Taylor Quimby. He spoke with Chris Cassidy, and he's picking up the next part of the story from here.
Now, just like in Star Trek, real astronauts use full-scale, functional mock-ups of their spacecraft in order to train for different scenarios. So let's imagine the spacecraft as a car. First, astronauts learn what all the stuff inside does, like the steering wheel, the pedals, etc.
Where the valves are and where the sensors are and what things you can interface with.
Then they open the hood, and they learn how all that stuff works. This is the radiator. Here's what it does. These are the parts of the engine. So on and so forth.
And once you get the hang of that, the training team will then inject malfunctions into the simulations.
So maybe ground control flips the check tire pressure light on. The astronauts stop. They check their tire pressure. Maybe they put some air in the tires.
And then as you get more complicated, they do more integrated failures like an electrical system. Obviously, if you fail an electrical bus, it's going to have impacts to all of the systems on the vehicle.
Now, the check engine light is flashing, there's smoke coming from the hood, and the power windows aren't working. It's a total mess.
It's difficult if you're looking at open the hood of your car and you see steam coming out, and you're trying to tell the mechanic on the phone, well, I don't know, there's just steam coming out of this metal thing.
Yeah.
But if you're able to say the cooling line that's entering the feed side of the radiator has broken, that's much more helpful to the mechanic.
None of this training is conducted with the expectation that crews, either on the ground or in space, can train for every imaginable scenario. There are just way too many to consider.
On a real flight, we don't know if it's going to be that thing that we simulated that broke. But that's not so important as how do you respond when something happens that you've never seen before.
So, given that, how important do you think failure is to the process of training for spaceflight?
In training, we're going to have situations where the team doesn't figure it out correctly. And what's important to us is that then given the debrief and a little bit extra training, maybe then presented that same situation, those same team members respond to it correctly or in a different way or handle it better. So in the training aspect of it, I don't want to say that we want to fail, but we want to push our people to the very edge of their ability to keep up.
Do you think that a no-win scenario, a scenario in which a crew was put through a simulation that could only end badly, that can only end in failure, does that have any value in real-world applications to you?
It wouldn't be negative training, but we have limited amount of time and resources to prepare our crews for flight. We want to use that time most effectively. If we're just doing stuff that they can't ever succeed at, you know, where's really the value in that?
Yeah.
It's like training your little league team with a major league baseball pitcher and then batting practice. It doesn't help anybody. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so how would Chris Cassidy react should Mission Control throw a no-win scenario his way? He'd handle it like a pro.
What I would do is just go in that sim and fight the alligators that are closest to the boat, and just keep keeping options open that might work.
In Star Trek Wrath of Khan, Captain Kirk takes a different tack. After taking the Kobayashi Maru multiple times, each time ending in failure, he begins to suspect the true nature of the test, that it is programmed to be unwinnable. So he reprograms it.
On the test, sir, will you tell me what you did? I would really like to know.
Lieutenant, you are looking at the only Starfleet cadet who ever beat the no-win scenario.
I don't like to lose.
Then you never faced that situation. Face death.
I don't believe in the no-win scenario.
Kirk says, I don't like to lose.
Again, philosophy professor Janet Stenwedel.
And that's well and good, but the whole rest of that movie has Kirk in a situation where he is not able to pop out of reality to reprogram the circumstances to win, at least not to win in a way where he gets to walk away with no casualties.
There's an interesting ongoing debate about how Kirk handled the Kobayashi Maru and whether what he did, reprogramming the test, should be considered cheating. In one way, he beat the unbeatable test. But if you look at it from Chris Cassidy's perspective, Kirk kind of missed the point.
It's almost like he passes the test's fake goals, but
totally
and utterly fails the test's actual goals.
Yep. I think there's a lot of context in which people do that in life. You know, they get 3 units for this college course and they don't really get what it's about, but they get the piece of paper that says they learned it, but, you know. So it's a tension.
Jetta, you really don't like tests.
This may have something to do with the number of papers I have sitting in my office to grade.
Janet Stenwedel there. Earlier, we heard from NASA's chief astronaut, Chris Cassidy, and our thanks to both of them for being part of this story.